Today I'd like to complete our discussion of the proper face to proper direction to face when davening, in particular when the Aron and Israel are facing in different directions. Last time we saw that there's a basic apparent stira between our sugya here toward the end of Tefillat HaShachar on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph in Brachot, which basically tells us when all is said and done to face toward Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, the Makom HaMikdash, etc. on the one hand. Then on the other hand, the sugya in Bava Basra, Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph to Chaf Hei Amud Beis, which although it starts with Hilchos Shchinim in terms of where to put a tannery in relation to a city, the Gemara goes from there to a discussion not of Hilchos Shchinim, but rather the Makom HaShchina of all things. And the Gemara Bava Basra we saw listed somewhere around the range of, let's say, eight or so different positions in regard to the proper place to pray. So just to review quickly, there's one view in the Gemara that the Shechina is Bimarav, and therefore that's why you're not allowed to put the tannery there, and that's where one must face. We saw the suggestion in the Gemara that perhaps actually one of the proof texts could be understood in the opposite direction. Originally, the Gemara thought that the fact that Utzva Shemaim the Chamish Nachavim would seem to indicate that they are the Tzva'e HaShemaim, as it were, in the east, and they are davening toward the west. But in fact, the Gemara suggests that it's Kamishnacha the Rabo, and therefore, in fact, they're facing eastward. So that's the second possibility, at least, that emerges in the Gemara. Third position, forwarded by a number of Amorayim, is that Shechina B'chol Makom can daven in any direction. There's a fourth view in the Gemara that says Shechina B'chol Makom, you can daven in any direction with the exception of east, right? Because that's what the Minim do. Right, and that's what the pagans do, presumably, and so therefore that is prohibited. Then the Gemara says that if you want to become wealthy, you face north. If you want to become wise, you face south. So those are options 5 and 6, essentially. Right? Then the Gemara says, well, actually, if you want to become wealthy, the first thing you need to do is to become smart. So you just face southward. And then the Gemara says, well, actually, there's a stira within the position of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was the same one who said that Shechina b'marav. So what's he doing recommending that one face southward in order to become both wise and wealthy? So there's no discussion about handsome in the Gemara. And then the Gemara, and so the Gemara resolves that by saying that it's due day. So Rashi understands that to mean that you should face one direction and then move your feet a little bit in the other way as well. All right, another possible reading of the Gemara is that you face one way and that you turn your body in a different direction. And then, at the end of all of that, the Gemara finally comes on to, let's say, the seventh or eighth position, depending on how you're counting, and the Gemara says, actually, Amrlei Rabbi Chanina Ravashi Kigona Atun Diasusu B'tzon Deret Yisrael Adrumi. Right? So he says, no, if you live in the north of Israel, he identifies Babel as being in the north. That's a separate discussion. It's not actually north of Israel, as we know, from our modern maps. Of course, you can blame that on Yirmiyahu. It's a Fonti Batach Hara'a. And there's a big discussion among the Farshim as to what that means, but that's beyond the scope of our issue right now. Be that as in, Gemara says that if you, for halachic purposes, if you are living north of Yerushalayim and davening, one should face south, right? So leaving aside the topographical and geographical issues, right, the final view in the Gemara here in Bava Basra, about view number 8, is that one should indeed face toward Yerushalayim, and Rashi interprets this last view in that way. Adrimu, Shetihiyu, Ponim, source number 3 on the sheet, Shetihiyu, Ponim, Letzad Yerushalayim, Misham Dechsev, Vispalu, Elecha, Derechar, Tzam, Vigomer, citing the same parak in Sefer Melachim that the Gemara Brachot had invoked. That said, the entire thrust of the Gemara until the last line or two is in clear contradistinction to the sugya and Brachot. And the question is, first and foremost, how are we to resolve this glaring contradiction? Okay, so that's pretty much where we left it last time. I'd like to explore a number of solutions that were offered. Simplest solution, Adam, yeah.
Can I ask a question? In Brachot it says, "Yichaven libo avinu shel shamayim."
Yeah.
Are they assuming it's the same as where is the Shechina?
Where are you? Which line in Bracha?
In source 1.
Yeah, but where? Or in the Gemara?
In the Gemara.
No, but where?
In the very beginning. Of like, wait,
so yeah, but that's assuming Mishin Yechol Avin Yitzruchot.
Right? Yechaven et Libo, Kenegel Aviv Shev HaShemayim.
Right.
Is that
So it's not clear.
Assuming that's the same as the Shekhinah and the, or like, and the Malachim, is that what the whole thing is?
Right.
They have to be the same? Like, is that the assumption we're working under? As opposed to, you know, up?
Well, it's clear, yeah, I mean, you're not looking in any direction, whether you're thinking of Malachim, or you're thinking of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh HaKadashim, or whether you have any imagery in your mind at all.
We're saying, oh, well, the Shekhinah is in the west, or the Malachim are in the east. Like,
I don't think it's relevant to that discussion. It's Tzva HaShemayim? I don't think so. That's Tzva HaShemayim, L'cham Shachem, K'neged Aviv Shva HaShemayim. I think that the point is that if he really has no idea where he is, so then he should think about God, but he can't necessarily be obligated to face some particular direction.
Any particular direction.
Okay. Right. I think so. Yeah?
Okay. So then they're not that much.
They are, because when someone can see, there's not a contradiction. The whole rest of this, again.
To Yerushalayim versus a specific direction, regardless of Yerushalayim.
Right. So if you live in India, right, what do you face? Or you live in America, what do you face? Anywhere. Right? I mean, for those who can see and have a compass or know which direction is which. So there's an outright contradiction between the first seven views in the Gemara Bava Basra and the final / Gemara and Bracha. Okay. So Rishonim address this issue quite openly, and the predominant view among the Rishonim is to simply say that there's a machloket esodiyot, at least if you leave aside the last line in Bava Basra, and that basically that's going to be the bottom line is that there's no way to reconcile these sugiyot at all. And furthermore, the majority of Rishonim, if they understand that there is a stira, they rule in accordance with sugiyot and brachot and the final view in Bava Basra. Probably for a couple of reasons. Number one, because we often pass on like the sugya d'shmeitza, right? In other words, the one that appears in context of the primary sugya, so that's going to be the one that's more authoritative. We find that in a number of places with regard to klalei hapsak, and here presumably the primary sugya is the sugya brachot. That's the one that's bimkoma. That's number one. Number two, again, the Gemara Mufavasa itself has the final position as being that one should face toward Eretz Yisrael, so that would seem to tilt the scales as well. And so, for example, you find this in Toso and Brachot and Daf Lamed Aleph, source number 4, L'tal Piyot Tel Shekol Piyot Ponim Bo, Chihak Shema, Ta'kayim Balan, V'chim Askinim Belo Yachbor. He says, we paskin like the Gemara and Brachot, and then in fact, the maskana, the underlined maskana, as opposed to final position cited, right, but it's actually the conclusion of the Sugyam of Basra, the Gemara Atun, the Kamisun, the Tzona, the Yisrael, Ajrimu, Velo Chahani Amorai Dile'el Sham, in other words, unlike the previous Amoraim in Bava Basra, Diplugi Yashkina B'Mizrach, right, Tosos assumes that's a legitimate position, which is not so clear in the Gemara, right, but that seems to be the Dechia of the Tzva HaShemayim proof text, Yashkina B'Mizrach, B'Marav. Okay, so Tosos says that's how you paskin, and therefore concludes Tosos, living in France, etc., in Western Europe. Achshav anu b'ma'arava shel Eretz Yisrael, akin anu ponim la'mizrach. Okay, so that's where we get Mizrach from. So Tosa says that out explicitly. The Rambam, not explicitly, but implicitly seems to pass in the same way. The Rambam in Perakei Halacha Gimel V'chot Tfilah writes as follows, Nochach HaMikdash Ketzad. The Rambam had written that this is one of the sine qua nons of Tfilah, at least the Chadchila. He haya omid b'chutza la'aretz. If one was standing outside of Israel, Machzir Panav Nochach Eretz Yisrael Mispalel. Haya omid ba'aretz mechavin espanav k'neged Yerushalayim. Haya omid b'Yerushalayim mechavin panav k'neged HaMikdash. Haya omid b'Hamikdash. And then he adds, so in other words, the Rambam seems to pass him straight out like the sugya in Brachot. Just as right, which would seem to work nicely for Tosot, that basically, on the end of the day, the sugya in Bava Basra is dilo aliba dehilchasa. Just as an aside, it's interesting. The stress in the Rambam, I suppose the Gemara will have to get back to this, is about machazir panav nochach, right? He keeps our mechavin panav keneged instead of yechavin libo, which is the language in our Gemara. The Rambam's language seems to be simpler. Rambam says, you face there. You turn your head toward Yerushalayim, toward wherever it is. But the Gemara itself does not use that language. It's Meduyak. The Gemara uses the terminology of Yechaven Libo. And the question is, what is the significance of that? And we'll have to circle back. So that's the view of Tosot. That's the view of the Rambam. That seems to be the view of the Rif. That seems to be the predominant view among the Rishonim. I think it's fair to say that Rov Rishonim hold this way. There are, if much fewer, indications that there were those Rishonim who utilized a similar resolution to the Gemara, but turned the Psak on its head. In other words, they understood that there's probably a Machloket HaSugyot here, but we paskin actually like one of the views of the Fabastra. So this is cited, if you take a look at the Shilta Giborim, he cites a position that ultimately is attributed to the Mahari Abu Hav, who basically says that in his shul, in his community, they faced south or north and didn't face toward Eretz Yisrael at all. And the thrust seems to be that maybe we paskin like the menorah, right? They really wanted their wisdom and their wealth or whatever it may be, but they didn't seem to face toward Eretz Yisrael at all. So there are indications, although it seems to be a das yachid, that perhaps we again paskin like one shita, but actually invert it and go the other way. Another way to learn Mari Abu Hav, that practice that he was citing, is that just means shchina b'chol makom. They can face pretty much any way you want. But either way, the point would be that we hold that there's perhaps a machloket sugyot, but we actually paskin not in accordance with the sugya and brachot, but rather like at least one of the views in the sugya and Bava Basra. That's a possibility as well. Although again, it does not seem to be the primary shita that's out there.
Of the opinions in Bava Batra,
yeah.
The whole argument of the Shechina and the Malachim, that is not for the Tannaites, right?
Well, it's all connected. In other words, the Gemara is halacha psak about the Tannaites. The Gemara originally thought it was because the wind is going to blow it in. The Gemara rejects that, and then the Gemara says, no, it's actually because Shechina b'Marav. The Gemara never explicitly
connecting that to letting turn and face the Shechina, right. is a next step.
It's true, but the Gemara makes that step. That's the whole Gemara. Otherwise, the Gemara doesn't make sense. You mean if you hold Shechina b'chol makom, what do you do with the tannery? Is that what you mean to say? Or if we don't hold the Shechina b'marav, where does that leave us with the Mishnah b'Bava Basra? Is that the question? That's an interesting one, actually.
No, that is an interesting question. That's not exactly
what I'm saying. Thank you for spurring the question.
That it doesn't seem until the very end of the whole thing about Russia that we get to anything related to tefillah. Of if you want to be in the Yachkim, in Yashir. Like, that's the first time where we're talking about something similar to tefillah.
Right, but the Gemara, the fact that the Gemara makes the transition, otherwise the Gemara is not comprehensible. Right? Otherwise, right, the sugya doesn't fit.
Yeah.
You could suggest it, and again, you can suggest that maybe the Sugyan Bracha would be opposed to it, for example.
Right.
You can suggest, that's what I was just mentioning, that you can suggest that the other Shitos in Bava Basra might detach that connection, and then you have to figure out, so what do they say about the Mishnah? Why is Marav different? If it's not because of the Ruach, right, it's not because of the Ruach Mizrachit, and it's not because Shechina b'Marav, then what is the reason?
Right, or maybe
fair questions.
Kind of idea of like of a concept of kavod and Hashem and not making it smelly, but tefillah might be
different. Yeah,
communal. Meaning the communal element of tefillah makes a lot more sense in the brachot thing, where everyone
absolutely
something. Whereas the
no, I think you're right.
Kavod is like maybe.
I think you're right. I think that's a great point. Right. It's either kavod or another way of saying it, it's the communal center. is another way of saying it. I think that that's a great point. In other words, I think what you're suggesting, if I understand correctly, is that what's being reflected here is not just different shittos, but different fundamental understandings as to where one faces. Right? Either where one faces or where the Shekhinah is. And you're suggesting maybe it's not just where the Shekhinah is, but it's actually where one should face during Tefillah, and in turn, maybe that reflects something fundamental as to what Tefillah is really all about. Should we face the Makom HaShekhinah, or even if the Shekhinah is Bemara, maybe I should still face Mizrach, or whatever it may be, in terms of the Makom HaMikdash, because that's, right, that's Tel Shekopio Ponimbo, right, that's where all Jews, no matter where they are dispersed in the world, they all face in that direction, that's our central axis in terms of orientation, but maybe that's different than the Makom HaShekhinah.
Right.
That's possible.
Still in my own life, I can see the West cleaner for the spiritual
whatever that is. Yeah, that's possible. I wonder if it in turn is contingent on A, the central the role of that notion of sort of the communal center vis-a-vis tefillah. And number two, I wonder if it's relevant to the significance of the Mishkan. Or the Mikdash, rather. In other words, right, that so the classic debate between the Rambam and the Ramban, I think, could be relevant here. The Rambam would work better for your suggestion rather than the Ramban, where there's some other significance to the Mikdash, which is aside from the Makom HaShekhinah. If I hold that it's really the repository for the Shekhinah, and that's really the idea, right, then it wouldn't work as well. And if I hold that the Mishkan prefigures the role of the Mikdash, right, so then it wouldn't work as well. But if I hold like the Rambam, it actually works out nicely with another Rambam that I've been thinking about, which is the Rambam of that only Klal Yisrael Shaver Tisrael Kiriyim Kahal, and the idea that Yerushalayim is again sort of the central axis around which everything revolves. Those who maintain that Yerushalayim, that 180 degrees away from Yerushalayim is where we should place the international dateline on the basis of the Midrashim, that was somehow the place from which the world was created, whatever that means. Those kinds of positions that sort of place Yerushalayim at either sort of the center of the universe in the larger theological sense, or at minimum just our own center as a Jewish people, as a Klal Yisrael. I think that that might tell Shekol Pio Ponimbo. I think that that could be really interesting for that. That's really interesting. Right, and think about it, because I'm giving a shiur in Shavuot on the whole Smicha controversy in the 16th century, in terms of the Chiddush HaSmicha and the Rambam, and that's where he mentions this. But what's interesting is there, and in other instances in Jewish history, you have disputes between the Chachmei Yerushalayim on the one hand and Chachmei Eretz Yisrael and other places on the other, right? So you have that there, because the Mahari Beirav wanted to renew the Smicha Yuzab in Tzfat, and the Chachmei Yerushalayim, led by the Maharal Bach, disagreed. You have that. Or much later on in history, you have that again. You have Saruv Cook comes to Yafo, and he becomes the chief rabbi there, and he permits, of all things, that, right, the minor issue, it would have seemed minor, is that he permits sesame oil as kitnio. And the Chachmei Yerushalayim disagree, but it erupts into a huge debate. And then, of course, you have the Hetzer Mechira, which is the classic one. But these are all really interesting examples where you have a debate within Eretz Yisrael between the Chachmei Yerushalayim on the one hand and Chachamim of other areas as well. And I wonder if anyone, I don't remember offhand, but if anyone invokes sort of like, you know, as more than a polemical kind of tool or tactic, but you know, the notion of kimitzion tete yisara, that if it's not just that Korp Klal Yisrael is centered in Eretz Yisrael, but that's the Makom HaSanhedrin, Mishkas HaGazus, I think that would be interesting for this too. Just as an aside. But yeah, I think that that's fascinating. It would be worth exploring more fully with the different views, think about the nature of Tefillah in particular. It sounds like a really fruitful avenue for further thought. I'd be really interested to hear more about that, or to think more fully about it. Okay, so that's sort of one basic resolution with a 1A and a 1B, is that the 1A, there's a stira when we paskin like Brachot, or the 1B, there's a stira when we paskin like one of the views in Bava Basra. There's another possibility out there. By the way, that's the primary psak of Shulchan Aruch, like 1A. There's another possibility out there, which is that Efshar L'Kayim Shnehem, this actually appears in the Rama in Halacha Beis. If you take a look, it's in Orachayim Sadi Dalid. Sif Beis, Mispalal, so the Mechaber writes, Mispalal Aruch Mishar Ruchot Yitzadid Panav, excuse me, Yitzad Eretz Yisrael. Alright, so if for whatever reason you're facing the wrong direction, you should still, at minimum, turn your face toward Eretz Yisrael. Imhu b'chotzar, it's fine. V'Yerushalayim, imhu Eretz Yisrael. Ulu mikdash, imhu b'Yerushalayim. So picking up on that, Haggah writes the Rama, V'anu shemachazirin paneinu l'mizrach, v'nei sh'anu yoshim ma'aravash Eretz Yisrael, so that's Tosos, v'nimtza paneinu l'Eretz Yisrael, right? So it's Tur Smag, but really coming from the Baal Tosos. Okay. Then he says, it's another halacha we haven't discussed yet. It's actually prohibited to place it due east where the sun will rise literally in the morning. So that's an ironic potential problem with the east. So the issue, the concern about the minim finds echoes in the Rishonim, right? But that starts from the Sugim of Basra. And then the Rama comes to our point, so that's fascinating. So it's sort of picking up on the Mechaber said, and this is also based on Maria Buha, which I think is quoted in the BCO, say, Dr. Moshe discussed it as well, which is that one puts their feet toward north or south, but then one turns one's face towards Israel, and that would be sufficient. This would be interesting in terms of the discussion that we were just having, which is that maybe there are two dinim in terms of not just practically which way you face, but in terms of what one does, because there's sort of a tension, there are different aspects of tefillah, and those are manifest in one's physical comportment as well. Now you try, this is also, by the way, a problematic for shakling, which is the real issue in the sugya. If you've ever tried facing one direction and having your body turn the other and shakling away, this is, right, so that's a real issue. And to suggest that's a real Tzarafian. Okay, sure, good. Okay. There you go. Ah, that's very good. So that's a real issue. So for those who believe that it is a halach lama shemi sinai to shuckle and shuckle well during tefillah, that's a real Tzarafian, this Rama. Does that mean the Rama didn't shuckle? I don't know. Is that heretical to suggest such a possibility? Now, someone who was once davening without shuckling, and someone else told him he davened like a galach. So, that's okay. Anyhow, fine. So that's another possible solution where you can again have your cake and eat it too. And again, here too, there are two variations. There are other views than Rishonim. There might be Mashmud and Rashi that maybe one inverts this, and that's the other way around. That it's actually you face your feet toward Mizrach and you turn your head toward Tzafon v'Darom in order to fulfill the Salach and the Gemara. So again, different variations on these different solutions. There might be a third larger resolution, although I'm not certain that it's a resolution directly, but it's worth mentioning already here as well, which is the suggestion that if this does not help us to fully reconcile the sugyota, it helps to massage the contradiction, which is to suggest that one's direction when in terms of facing toward Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, etc., is something that is very generic and does not have to be 100% precise.
Just like general direction.
It's like, yeah, if he, you know, a little bit in that direction, something like that. Now, again, that's not going to work for all the Shitos in Bufa Basra, but maybe there are some possibilities there, like facing north, if you face a little bit east, that's enough. So it's Efshel Lekayim Shnehem by just kind of going in that generic direction. And that would be a third answer. And this is a suggestion that's forwarded in particular by the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan, which appears here, it's at source 7, it's in Aruch Chaim Tzadi Dalet. I give you Se'ifim above through Tess. The Aruch HaShulchan is his comments are occasioned really by the fact that the Minhag Yisrael is not to face exactly east. This is already noted by the Lavush. The Lavush, so far as I know, which I gave you at a little bit length also in number 8 here, it's in Aruch Chaim Tzadi Dalet Gimel, the Lavush already is the first one that I'm familiar with to point out that contemporary Batei Knesset, the Aron Kodesh, does not face east properly. So the Lavush is living in Eastern Europe, so we're now northeast of Eretz Yisrael, right? And in Central Europe, right? The places in Eastern Europe where Jews live generally were northeast of Israel, right? Poland, etc. And if that's and under such circumstances, you would expect, of course, that the shuls would face they would face southeast if the Jews are northwest. And yet, that wasn't the minhag, right? Mizrach was a powerful minhag apparently, and that's what people continued to do. right? So if everyone's facing Mizrach, it's a little bit distressing. And so the Levush actually asks, sort of, you know, where is this coming from? And it doesn't seem to be right. And he suggests that actually we should build them differently. And he warns everyone that one should be very careful when building the shul and when davening the shul, etc. So the Aruch HaShulchan was aware of this reality as well, and he suggests essentially a limud zchus, although sometimes the Aruch HaShulchan suggests it just as a limud zchus, and on other occasions he actually suggests it as what he thinks is right. In this case, it's really the latter. And basically his thesis is that when the Gemara says that you have to face eastward, or face rather toward Eretz Yisrael, it means generally a little bit, just sort of be mitzadeh in that direction, but you don't really have to pull out your compass. And even before compasses, you don't really have to be precise in your direction. You just have to kind of face there in a generic kind of way. What's the basis for this suggestion? So he offers two bases. Number one, or really three. Number one is Minag Yisrael. Number two is he mentions the Sugya of Basra, because right, those positions seem to outright contradict the Sugya in Brachah. And then he makes another diuk as well. And he points out that right, he points out first of all that right, this idea of mitzadeh tzude that we mentioned in the Gemara Mava Basra, that you face a little bit, right? And so right, he quotes the Rashi and the Smag also about facing one way and turning your feet in a different way that we mentioned in context of the Ramah. And on that basis, he suggests essentially that mitzadeh tzude is really the key to the sugya. They don't have to face exactly there. And then he gives one other proof, and he goes back to the language of the Gemara in Brachot, which we highlighted earlier. Now we contrasted the language of the Rambam with the language of the original sugya. The Rambam says mehapeich panav. Right, the Gemara said that what ichavim libo keneged x keneged y keneged z. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, I don't understand. What are you talking about, right? What are ichavim libo? It's not about ichavim libo. It's about what you actually face. What are you talking about? The diuk doesn't work. So he says, no, that's the idea. The idea is, yes, your kavanas haleh has to be manifest in your physical comportment, but because tefillah, it's almost as if he's bothered by the theological notion that I have to face in a certain direction. The entire idea is silly. Melochal aretz kavodo, right? What does that mean that you're facing? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in a certain place, right? What is that even talking about? So although he doesn't deny the halacha altogether, what he says is halacha is not so medayik on this, because that's not really the essential point. Your physical comportment is meant to reflect a certain kind of attitude. Since it's the attitude that's most essential, more so than the physical direction which one faces, so the physical direction is like, it's David Sidud Be'alma. And that's his language. Right, so you look in Seif Ches, V'nimsa l'fizeh, D'ha'aminda nergen eris Yisrael v'Yushalayim, in ha'kavana neged mamash, ela k'tzat n'tia l'sham. A little bit. Vani Amar Dimi Tam Zeshani Bevrisa Yichavin Yisrael Kineged Eretz Yisrael Kineged Yerushalayim Ve'lo Amar Yamu Kineged Eretz Yisrael El Mishum Dizei Yefshar B'chol Makom V'day B'tzdudei Ve'alma K'dimisayim Me'achzir Panav K'lomar D'vachzor M'panim Dai. Right? So it's a little bit, right? And he's medaik in Tefillah Shlomo. It's the general direction. It's derech hamakom hazeh. It doesn't mean directly toward it, and so on and so forth. And he uses that to justify the Bnei Yisrael, and as well as some of the the imprecision, or namely the imprecision in a number of shuls. So that's his attempt. Now again, does that resolve every single part of the stira, every single shita? No, but it's helpful for south, it's helpful for north, it's helpful maybe for Shkinokal Malcolm a little bit, right? Not perfect, but it begins to unpack some of this again. Okay, that's with regard to the resolving some of the contradictions. So though clearly the Aruch HaShulchan is going to be important for us moving forward as well, because now we have to ask the question, okay, so what happens when, in fact, the shul is built such that you're not facing Mizrach? And that can happen for lots of legitimate reasons even, right? You have that. I assume this was built this way for functional reasons and so on and so forth, but there are lots of reasons. Remember when we were in Einstein, we had this issue. We ended up building it more northward than eastward, because there were certain permanent structures. There are just certain pillars that are a part of the building that are structural in nature. You can't move them. And when you're starting to think about shul design, you have to work around the limitations that you're given. And sometimes you literally cannot meet the needs of the community while building, or the sacrifices to the functionality of the shul are so significant that you're going to have a very substantial position, a percentage of the community facing toward a pillar, or it's not going to work, or it's right, and so on and so forth. Now, part of the question of our sugya is, so what kinds of factors justify that decision? What kinds of factors do not justify that decision? But usually what we encounter is, right, most of us aren't building shuls on a regular basis, so it's usually a question of which way to actually face once that's already the reality. And this became started to become an issue, again, around the same time as the Levush. Now, one wonders why this only became relevant or practical at that time. And the reason is actually, right, it's pretty interesting. I mean, the question of which way to face is a Tanaitic issue. That's going all the way back, right? It's much, 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 much earlier, right? So we have evidence at the latest, in, let's say, the second century of the Common Era, about where to face. It's already in our Mishnayos, etc. Right, the question of what happens if the Aron is in the wrong place, that's first discussed in, let's say, the 17th century. That's a long time not to have the Aron facing the wrong direction. Why didn't the Tanayim, Amorayim, Gonim, Rishonim, anyone deal with this issue? Where were they? And what happened? Right. So the answer is actually, it's a pretty straightforward historical answer. There were no permanent Aronot Kodesh in shuls until roughly the 17th century. Shuls simply weren't built that way. They had a separate space. Maybe they had some sort of Aron, but it was in a different room. Typically, the Sefer Torah was kept in a different space in the shul, and they carried it in for Kriyat HaTorah. Not sure what we do, right? Let's look at the Sephardic Minyan here. Right? It's the same exact thing. And that's actually, it seems. Maybe that was for, I think it was for security purposes, I'm not certain. But it seems pretty clear. There's pretty straightforward evidence. I've seen this noted by a number of authors and haven't seen it disputed anyway. It seems to be clear evidence that it was only around the time of Levush that this became an issue at all, because the construction of shuls started to change. I'm not sure exactly what led it to change, but that seems to be the history of it. So that's just an interesting observation. But either way, so once it became an issue, it's the question of what one should do. And so again, it was in particular the Achronim who began to address the issue. So there are a number of Achronim who say, that's very lovely, all right, it's very nice, the Gemara says you face Eretz Yisrael. And that's pretty much all there is to say. And you have a number of prominent Achronim who say exactly that. The Magen Avraham, for example, in source number 9, he quotes it. He quotes it from earlier Achronim, Sif Katan Gimel in Siman Tzadidal, V'lechein Koven Ha'echob Ha'mizrach V'afilu Kavau Ha'echob Tzadacher, nonetheless, Yispalel Le'mizrach. Pretty straightforward. Now again, the Magen Avraham is writing not in Western Europe, he's writing already in Eastern Europe. Nonetheless, he just simply says Mizrach. The Taz also suggests the same thing. The Mishnah Berurah passes this way in Sif Katan Tes, I believe it's in Tes. So that's a throwaway to a reference to that Shita and Basra, Yaakov, which is what we have, right, in our Beit Midrash face itself. Yaakov panim lo lema'arav sheyihya achare ha'am lehechal. So that already is an important detail we'll have to come back to. Mi afil kaval hechal b'kos alcher sarich mispalel lehachazir panav lamizrach. Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah is pretty straightforward on this issue, and that if it were just the Mishnah Berurah, there really wouldn't be much else to talk about. Things do get a little bit more complex in the Pri Megadim. I'm not going to read it inside, we're tight in time, but if you take a look at the Mishnah Tzav and Sif Katan Bees, you're commenting on that Taz, I give it to you. So there are those from Daik in the Pri Megadim that he already is not so certain that perhaps one has to take into account the Makom Ha'aron as well. The Aruch HaShulchan in the continuation, I didn't give you this piece, but the Aruch HaShulchan also is a source that's very often quoted in this regard, picking up on his whole notion that you can be Mitzad and Mitzud, and the whole thing's a little bit Lav Davka. So once that's the case, given that you don't want to turn your back to the Aron, so putting two and two together, so the Aruch HaShulchan says that he thinks that you can kind of inch toward, right, or turn a little bit toward Yerushalayim as sort of a sign of that directionality and yet that intentionality, and yet you don't have to turn your entire body in that direction. In fact, you suggest that one should not. The Aruch HaShulchan in particular says that one should not, similar to what we just said in Shavuot, one should not turn one's back to the Aron, to be Zion to the Aron, to be davening facing with one's back to the Aron. That's number one. Right. It's interesting, I always wondered about this, I'm not sure. Does it only mean Shmona Esrei? What should one do in terms of sitting, etc.? Right? Like in a base medrash that has chairs in both directions sometimes, right? Or you're, I don't know, or, right? What?
Sorry, you sure.
Right, you're going in a circle, right? So that's so would this preclude that, or is it a particular resilient ones are setting Shmona Esrei with ones back to the Aron Kodesh, which is an arguable position. It was something that I wondered if that would be relevant or not. But be that as it may, that's the suggestion of the Aruch HaShulchan. Even goes so far as to suggest, in light of what he said already, and because one does not want to cause any resilient, etc., to the Aron, so even if one is not fully facing away from the Aron Kodesh, still, one should be makbid and not to face with one's back there. So take a look in source number 13. So I took a piece from Rav Meidan from Gush. So he cites the position of Ramital asking for the Gush Beit Midrash that you should not face away from the Aron Kodesh. So that if there's a conflict, certain places it was the same, sort of front right of the Beit Midrash was facing toward Yerushalayim. So right, that was basically northward from the Gush.
The one with and, all the windows, the main one.
Yeah, the main Beit Midrash. And so from Rav Amital's Makom was the same, like roughly, but from like Rav Amital, the right part of the Beit Midrash facing to the toward the front.
West.
So right, so the Gush is facing, so Rav Amital would say that you should face more or less toward the Aron, or at least not to turn against the Aron, so that one is significantly facing away from the Aron Kodesh. And that was basically what he paskin. And I give that to you here. So Rav Meidan quotes the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan implies that halacha is very stringent about praying with one's back to the Aron. And he quotes it. And then he says, even though it's facing to the south, the Aron to not their backs completely facing the Aron, he still forgets turning more toward Yerushalayim. This is how Rav Amital Shlita, now ruled for us in our Beit Midrash. Although standing southeast of the Aron, including the Sheyat Tzibur, should not incline toward the east, but should remain facing due north, the direction of the Aron, etc. So it's those who are Mekel, or those who say you should not face away from the Aron, it's based on this position of the Aruch HaShulchan. This is one example of that. A note that's worth adding about this issue is that the Rav seems to have been cited as having held that one should face toward, it's not cited in one of two ways. One way cited is that one should simply face toward Yerushalayim. However, that citation goes that the Rav said, if one is davening in a Beit Midrash where people are all facing toward the Aron Kodesh instead of Yerushalayim, one should also face the Aron Kodesh in order to not appear, God forbid, that it's Meseh, to create the appearance of Meseh Kishte Rishuyo. And that would be problematic, and therefore the Rav said, in such a shul, one should still face the Aron. There's another suggestion, none of this is just pure rumor or an hearsay or something that's really reliable, not sure. But what's said is that the Rav, when he was during the days he was at YU, as opposed to Boston, he would rarely, if ever, daven in the main Beit Midrash at YU, which did not face east. And the suggestion is because the Rav felt that either because of the halachic issues or question as to which way one faces, or because of the tension between the way people faced and the proper halacha, the Rav, for that reason, simply did not daven in the white mean base medrash in YU, which sounds like bizarro. In the Rav didn't daven mean base medrash in YU, but those who were in YU at the time can tell you that the Rav was not exactly a public figure in the sense that he would come to major functions or anything like that. He would go to shir, he would do his thing, and that was it, and he was done. He wasn't the mashkiach. It wasn't Rosh Yeshiva, as we think of a contemporary yeshiva who sets the tone by being present and going, you know, like the notion of the Rav going to, I don't know, the Purim Bushfields or something was. It was inconceivable. It was just a different model for what a Rosh Yeshiva was. So who knows if, you know, what was the reason he didn't go? I'm not sure, but it's been suggested in this context as well. We have, by the way, just in closing, we have additional issues here because for us, if you have a certain degree of transparency over the mechitza, so then you have additional issues of distraction that get into the equation when some people face in that direction. And then once you get into the Rav's Mechzei Kishtei Rishuyah, it's not going to have some people face one way and some people face another, which is, of course, the Minhag of the Wayu Beis Medrash for many, many years, that Ishkol Hayashar Bein Avyasa. But Mamish, it felt like Shtei Rishuyah. I really think that's why President Joel built the new Beit Midrash, is because it just was such a pet peeve of his that you walk into the old Beis Medrash and you'd find 15 different Sakim. You'd have like one Rosh Yeshiva, literally, I remember, I see them, I know exactly who they are, I can go through them by name. One facing one way, one facing 90 degrees from him, and then every other possibility in between, that's just the Rebbe, never mind the students. So that was for that reason, but that's not just like a pet peeve, that's actually what kind of what the Rav was driving at. So to me, you know, that's part of, although there was a practice here before I came, to me that's a big piece of it. Even if you would have otherwise had like the Rav, if there's another reason to face toward the Aron, so once you're doing that, to then have different people facing different places, would run afoul of the concern of the Rav, and I think it's not just the Rav, and many others who have that concern as well. Okay. Shkrach.